They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Shu Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Shu Bartholomew. Joining me on the Commons today, we have Ms. Deborah Goonan. Thank you, Debbie, so much for joining us.
Hi, Shu. Thank you for having me again.
I'm looking forward to doing this show. For those of you who don't know, and I'm not sure that there's anyone left in America who doesn't know, that Deborah Goonan has her own blog called the Independent American Communities Blog. She is a prolific blogger, and she's just really doing incredible research and an amazing job. Debbie, thank you so much for everything that you're doing and all the information you're getting out there and all the research you're doing and getting it all out there for us. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the kind words, Sue.
And now you're here to tell us about it, and I'm really, really excited. So you did, and before we get started, one of your blogs, you had a big thing on top, and that grabbed my attention. And it says, the first step to getting what you want is having the courage to get rid of what you don't. And you were talking... It's absolutely right on message, right on target. And that's kind of where we're going to focus today's show, right?
That's right. There's so many people that feel that there's a need to have some kind of a homeowners association governing their neighborhood in order to protect property values. And they're afraid, well, what happens if we get rid of it? You know, then we'll have cars up on blocks and purple houses and, you know, the whole place will go to hell in a handbasket. So the other part of that, Shu, is that a lot of local governments are also afraid to get rid of the association governed model because this is how they pay for growth of new development. They shift all the costs to the developer and the homeowner so that the existing taxpayers don't have to pick up the bill. And that's why one of the main reasons why HOAs exist.
Well, yeah, that was the initial reason. It was because they said they didn't have the money for the infrastructure. But you know what? That may have been 60 years ago. I don't think that's true anymore. If it was even true then, I don't believe for a second that it's true, especially in places like Fairfax County and some of your other big jurisdictions. I know you're going to have small townships, but they don't have anything. I mean, they'll have the roads, but they don't have the fancy community centers and the incredible government buildings and the libraries and all of this, the huge depots for school buses and school meetings, not the schoolhouses, but the school meetings. You know, they don't have all of this infrastructure to maintain.
Well, not the small townships. What happens is that they're layered The county has a library, and so everybody who lives within the county pays a library tax on their property tax bill.
Yeah.
And then you have the school district taxes that's on your bill. You know, you might have a police department that's shared among two or three towns instead of one, so that they can spread out the cost. So in the end, you're paying for it one way or the other. It's just a matter of whether it's getting paid for through taxes or through HOA assessments, which are essentially another way to tax people.
But some of them are paying for it two and three times over because it's included in their property taxes. There's an additional tax added to that, and then you've got your HOAs. So as long as people just keep writing checks that, you know, for the bills that come in without knowing what they're paying for and without ever questioning where the money's going, you know, they just keep getting screwed. I'm sorry. I mean, they really do. And that's kind of where we are with one of the stories that you blogged about in Omaha.
Yes, in Omaha, Nebraska, there's an older homeowners association called Walnut Grove, and it's a little unclear from the news stories that I've read about it, and I try to do some research. The association has no presence on the web whatsoever, and I couldn't find any record of it. This is a group of about 288 homes that was built in the 1970s in near downtown Omaha. And when the homes were built, they created what they call sanitary improvement districts to run water and sewer out to each of these little neighborhoods as they were adding them. But they also created an HOA, and the HOA was there basically to, quote-unquote, protect property values by maintaining certain standards, you know, the usual rules and restrictions and all that kind of stuff. They did have a park. Walnut Grove has a park. And the park initially was part of this sanitary improvement district, which is a tax district that was established at the time. And the way that it works in Nebraska, I looked up the SID statute, and when they could create this sanitary improvement district for to create infrastructure, it could be water, it could be sewer, it could be other utilities, it could be roads. But it says specifically in the statute that no sanitary and improvement district may own or hold land in excess of 10 acres unless such land so owned and held by such district is actually used for a public purpose and is provided in this section within 3 years of its acquisition. Any sanitary and improvement district which has acquired land in excess of 10 acres in land area and has not devoted the same to public purpose as set forth in this section within 3 years of the date of its acquisition shall devote the same to a use set forth in this section and shall divest itself of such land.
Don't you love legalese nonsense?
Yeah. So in other words, when they were never intended to be the property of a private community for the long term or to be held by any developer or landowner for more than 3 years, anything more than 10 acres in size. So the sanitary improvement district, basically, even though this park was located in this neighborhood, it's been part of a public entity from the beginning. And in 1996, Omaha, Nebraska annexed the sanitary improvement district. So now the park that accompanies this Walnut Grove Association is actually part of the city of Omaha. It's owned by the city of Omaha. It's maintained by the city of Omaha. The only purpose for the HOA then is to basically enforce standards, make sure that there's, you know, your yard is not filled with trash and you mow the grass and things like that. One thing that the association is still left holding the bag on, there's a driveway, a small street or a driveway that serves five of the homes out of 288, and the city won't plow the snow or maintain that part of the road because there's no access. It's like a dead end up to five houses. And so they said, well, we're not going to take that. You'll have to figure that out. And the HOA has been collecting money from all of the owners to pay to remove snow from these five driveways. And when some of the owners found out about it, they were pretty upset because they think that the five owners who own the driveway should pay for their own snow removal. They don't think that 283 other homeowners should be paying for it. And so in the meantime, some of the owners have stopped paying their association dues, and now they have liens on their homes. So this is why they're now pushing to disband the HOA. And in fact, they just had a meeting not long ago, and it was televised on OWT in Omaha, Nebraska, where they actually let a reporter go into the meeting, which is kind of amazing.
We and used to do that all the time in the old days before CAI got their knickers in a knot about the whole thing. Things were more open.
Well, this was an open meeting, and they have a whole bunch of homeowners sitting in this meeting room talking to, voices are being raised and people are a little upset. And they're saying, well, why are we paying this money? What are we using it for? And they have a tape of the Homeowners Association president saying, as far as I'm concerned, you can disband this HOA, and people start cheering in the room. And so the end of the meeting basically says that they're not going to be paying. Nobody has to pay any assessments for 2017, and they're kind of low anyway. It's only a few hundred dollars a year, but it's the principle of the thing. And then they're going to have to decide whether or not they're going to drop collections on 80 or so people who have liens on their homes for not paying these assessments that really do nothing but remove snow from five houses. And they used a little bit of it to maintain a pathway in the park, but the park is owned by the city. So the HOA shouldn't be spending money on something that the city is already taking care of with tax dollars.
Isn't it ironic, Debbie, that, you're told that you have to have these things because they create, quote-unquote, community, yet what they're doing is creating adversarial relations between people.
Right.
When you think about it, why on earth should 288 people have to pay for one street that services only five of them, but legally they are responsible for it because that is owned collectively by all of them. And it's the setup. It's the way they've set these stupid things up that has left this mess.
And people were paying for that for many, for a number of years when they were also paying the sanitary improvement district was basically helping them pay for their roads and things like that. But when they annexed the sanitary improvement district, they said, well, we're going to take all the roads and your park, but we're not going to take this one drive. And so that's when the president of the HOA or the HOA board decided, well, we're going to use our dues money to pay to remove the snow and maintain this this piece of the road.
Because they own it.
And homeowners have rebuilt.
Because the HOA owns it. And
right.
Because it was set up that way.
It's a little unclear whether the HOA, because you'd have to actually look at the plat map and see who owns it legally. It could be that there is individual ownership or that there's easements or something involved. But all of that could actually be changed, if they have the right real estate attorney or land use attorney take a look at the documents that are on file with the county. Maybe they can make some sort of a deal where they basically just sell portions of their drives back to the owners who need those drives to access their homes, and then it becomes their responsibility to take care of it.
Okay. Some places have what's known as a pipe stem. It's a private drive that services only a handful of homes, but there's a deed attached to that.
Right.
And it's all clearly written out when you buy the property. It's like, all right, so here's the development, here are the homes. This is owned by the HOA, this is owned by the local municipal government, this is owned, it's in Virginia, it's the state that owns all the streets and the roads, so the county taxes us through the nose, but they don't do diddly squat about any of it. And then you have these pipe stems that only serve as part of it, but everything is set up legally right at the onset. So when you buy a house on a pipe stem, you know that you are going to be paying for that along with with the other people on that pipe stem. That is a private drive for however many people are on that pipe stem, and you're responsible for it. But if it's part of the HOA, which is why the HOA, I'm assuming, has been taking care of it, it belongs to everybody. It's the way it was legally set up.
Yeah, I'm not really sure that it belongs to the HOA or not. I wasn't able to verify that information one way or the other. I think the HOA assumes that it's their responsibility, but whether or not it actually is a different question, because all of the other roads were part of that sanitary improvement district. They were never part of the homeowners association. So that's why it makes me wonder, did something occur at the time of annexation to transfer ownership of that area back to individuals or to the HOA? That I'm not sure of. Like I said, I was unable to find details, but obviously the HOA could hire an attorney to find that out without too much difficulty. It would only take a record search of the deeds, and they would be able to tell.
You could do a record search. You could also go into the individual houses and see how it was set up. I'm not 100% sure, obviously. I don't know, but what happened in that particular case. But I do know that the typical setup of these developments is a mess. And what sometimes happens as well is that a developer will build something and will hire an attorney and ask the attorney to draft the governing documents. If you go to the records and you go back some years before we had the internet and before we were able to print out clean copies, but you go to the courthouse and you do some research, you'll find that they were all pretty much boilerplate documents. So you have development A, the developer hires an attorney, says, come up with the governing documents. And then those documents are photocopied over and over and over and over again. They just change the names of the developments. And by the time you get down a few generations, they're really hard to read.
Yes, I've seen some of those.
Yeah, you go to the courthouse and you do some research on it, and it's just impossible to read. But so sometimes I think that's what happens in these cases,
mm-hmm.
where they just photocopy the governing documents from one development to the other, but then you get this aberration in there, and you have this road that is not part and parcel of anything. I mean, nobody seems to know where it goes.
Right.
It's just the sloppiness of the way this has been handled, the legal
exactly.
nonsense that's gone into developing these so-called communities is
yeah.
just leaving a huge headache for the homeowners who have to come in afterwards and make these stupid things work.
And why put a lien on somebody's property for something so ridiculous?
Because they can. It's simple.
And I tried to find out whether or not this is a mandatory HOA or a voluntary HOA, and I could not find any definitive information on that. But they are putting liens. It was reported in two media outlets in Omaha. So now they're going to have to decide, you know, where they want to go, how they want to move forward. But it seems as though most of the owners are leaning towards just dissolving what's left of the HOA at this point. And then hopefully they'll just be able to release the liens from the people who owe, you know, a couple hundred dollars or whatever amount of money it is. And the people who own those five homes will probably have to make their own arrangement for snow removal and resurfacing when that's needed.
I don't know how long the road is or what it's all about, really, basically.
Yeah.
But my concern is more the fact that we're setting these things up. We're allowing these things to be built and developed with this mess. We're lying mm-hmm. to the consumers by saying it's going to protect your property values. We're lying to them saying that it's going to create community and you'll have more control over your immediate surrounding areas. And none of that is true. That's
yeah.
my beef. I mean, if you understand what you're going into and you think, oh, okay, I'm going to gamble that the person who moves in next door in 6 months is going to be reasonable, you know, and that's fine. Go for it. But know what
you're doing. You're going to gamble that the people who are on your board, if it's not you, are going to be reasonable people or honest or ethical or...
That's no gamble. You know damn well they're not going to be. Because really...
sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. It's, you know, you just don't know who you're going to get because you're basically getting volunteers. And in some of the early HOAs, when they were mostly very affluent people, these were the movers and shakers of cities at one time. So you had your professionals, your attorneys, your physicians, your, you know, school teachers, university professors. Those were the sorts of people that lived in some of the earliest planned communities. And so they had people who had some knowledge and who had business sense and social skills, and they would put these folks would involve themselves in their civic duty within their planned community, and you know they would lead the community and set up standards and so forth and so on. But as they started mass producing houses and creating plant communities for just about everything in new construction in the last 20 to 30 years, now you're getting people from all walks of life who, you know, most of them don't have the time. If they have the inclination and the ability to serve on the board, they don't have the time because they're busy working or, you know, maybe they're retired and they figure they put their time in. So the people that you get left are people who have time on their hands or, you know, people who want to feel important in some way, but they're not necessarily good leaders. They might not even know how to balance a checkbook. And yet here they are handling, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars of assessment collected from all of the owners.
You know,
it doesn't make sense.
Well, it doesn't make sense because it doesn't matter where you are and who you are and how educated you are. I've advocated for people in million-plus dollar developments where everybody on the board was a young millionaire.comer or a physician. And the horrors that were going on in that development were no different than the horrors that are going on someplace else. I mean, these people didn't know it. I wrangled with a physician who decided that, you know, the board would drop whatever they were doing against this family as long as they paid the association's legal fees. I said, they didn't hire your attorney. You did. They're not, they don't have to do that. Oh, it says right here in the law that they have to do that. I said, no. I said, show me where it says that. So he read, you know, and it says the prevailing party. And I said, no. The prevailing party is the person who goes to court and wins. You have not been to court.
Right.
So if you want to be the prevailing party and have a judge agree that you are the prevailing party, then I would recommend that you sue these people and then explain to the judge why you mistreated them so badly. And if he agrees that you were good doobies doing your job as nice, kind volunteers, he will force them to pay for it. But I said, right now, you're not the prevailing party.
Right.
But I said, you're not the prevailing party. So they dropped it. But, you know, the guy was a physician. He was into medicine. He knew how your body worked, and he knew all of that. But he didn't understand the law.
That's right.
You know, he couldn't decipher the legalese mumbo-jumbo. So to him, it was, we're above these meager little homeowners. We are the board. Therefore, we are entitled.
Exactly.
We can go and spend all this money and have the homeowner pay for it. It doesn't work that way. Even in a crazy legal society, it doesn't work that way.
Right. If people are very litigious, and it seems as though some of the upscale neighborhoods, you get a homeowner who doesn't like what's going on with the board, or if he feels that the board is harassing, they don't think twice about suing, because usually they have the money to do it. The only difference is that in a lot of communities, a homeowner doesn't have an extra $10,000 or $20,000 just sitting around to put on retainer with an attorney just to file a civil suit that may or may not go their way in the end.
Actually, the homeowners did not file a suit. They did not even hire an attorney. They never paid an attorney. They never had an attorney.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. I was their advocate. I was their advocate. We did not spend, the homeowners did not spend any money on an attorney. It was the association that did.
Oh, so the association went after the homeowner.
The association went after the homeowners because the association attorney said, oh, you've got to do this, otherwise he's a jackbooted thug. When they started getting letters, the homeowners went online and they started looking for help. And they found someone in Colorado who gave them my number.
Mm-hmm.
And so they called me a few times, and I ended up going over. And, you know, it was clearly a case of discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
Fair housing should have dealt with it. Fair housing didn't. They were intimidated by the attorney who went in and threatened them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ended up going. I'm not an attorney.
Right.
But I tried to mediate, and when I had that, they would call me, the board would call me, try to just give us some money and we'll go away. No, we're not going to give you any money. Why would we give you money? Because we spent this money. But the homeowner, the other homeowners were ticked off because they were, you know, they were facing special assessments. These guys are just throwing money around.
Yeah.
And the thing was, they didn't have a case. They really and truly didn't have a case.
Yeah, but they don't know it. They'll try it anyway.
So, I mean, they would have lost it. Well, they did have a case, actually, but they would have lost it anyway because of some of their actions. But, you know, again, I'm not an attorney, and I just sat there, and I was there for the homeowners. I just sat there and listened. And then I tried to mediate, and then they said, we'll drop it. We'll go away if they pay our legal fees. I said, hell no. what funny cigarette are you smoking?
Right.
Since when did you decide you were entitled to this? What's this right here? It's the law. No, it's not. Don't give me that. So you ask the question, does Walnut Grove really need its HOA? And the answer is?
My opinion is no, they don't really need their HOA. And apparently most of the owners would tend to agree. They don't have any functional reason to exist anymore. Most of the reason that local governments started HOAs, we'll go get back to this again, is because they wanted to have the HOA be in charge of construction and ongoing maintenance of certain infrastructure and their own security. And, you know, they didn't want to be in charge of gates or private roads, or a big one, even for ungated communities, a big one that HOAs dump on, cities dump on HOAs is stormwater control.
You know why?
Drainage ditches, retention ponds, sometimes canals, depending on where the neighborhood is located. The city and the county don't want to handle that, so they basically dump it onto the private organization of owners.
You know why? You know why, Debbie? Because they've increased density so much. In some areas, there's absolutely no land to absorb the rain and the runoff. And so, And so they make them have these drainage ponds that are a hazard. Kids have drowned in them, and then they insist that the HOA maintain them.
Right, and they're very expensive to maintain.
Well, they're a hazard.
First of all, it's a huge liability that requires the association to have adequate insurance. Because, as you said, people can fall in and drown in them.
Children have drowned in them.
Right. Adults have driven into them in their cars. When I used to live in Florida a few years ago, every couple of months you would hear a report on the news that somebody drove off the road in their car into one of these big retention ponds or small lakes. And sometimes people were able to rescue the driver from the car, and sometimes they weren't. And sometimes there were alligators in those ponds, and the alligator got to the person. So
That's in Florida.
It's a huge liability. I mean, up north, you know, alligators aren't really a problem, but you still have problems with snakes and, rodents and things like that, and mosquitoes that can breed if the water is too shallow and not kept clean. Another kind of thing that they do in other parts of the country, instead of having a permanent pond, they'll have like basically a big basin. And there's grass planted in it, but there's a great big basin that you can't really build anything there or put much of anything there. And then certain times of the year, if you have a snow melt and you have your spring rains, the water can accumulate in these basins, and it, over a couple of days, it slowly absorbs into the ground. That's another way that they handle it up here. But you still have all the giant under-drain pipes that go under the road or underneath people's driveways. In some places, you'll have open ditches on the side of the road.
Yes.
And these are hazards also for children and small pets. Sometimes they'll crawl into those pipes. And so a lot of jurisdictions will say, well, you have to keep them covered with a grate to keep small children from getting in there and getting stuck or injured or worse. So it's a huge liability, and it's dumped onto a lot of private plan communities and even condominium associations, for that matter. If they have a parking area and they have a drainage area, you know, they're in charge of that as well. Now, what some of these plan communities do, instead of handing over infrastructure maintenance directly to the HOA, they'll create an improvement district, like the sanitary improvement district that's what they call them in the Omaha, Nebraska area. In Texas, they have something called municipal utility districts. In Florida, they have something called community development districts. They're all like a type of special tax district, and they're public entities, but they're not exactly like cities and municipalities in that usually these special improvement districts, especially if they're used for developing new land, are controlled by the developer for a number of years during the initial construction process. And the reason for that is, especially municipal utility districts in Texas and your CDDs in Florida, the developer then issues bonds, and those bonds are used to finance construction of all the infrastructure. And then to pay back those bonds, when you buy a house in one of these districts, you're paying so much a year on your property tax bill to pay off this debt over, you know, 20 or 30, usually it's 30 years. So you could be paying, you know, $1,000, $2,000 a year or even more, depending on how elaborate the community is, just to pay back the debt on these bonds.
You know,
not including ongoing maintenance.
And the CDDs in Florida, because they're somewhat similar to that, but they have the authority to go in and take out additional mortgages. So sometimes you never really pay it off.
Yes.
They can decide they need more money, so they'll go and take out another mortgage, and you just keep paying and paying and paying. But I think what started this Omaha business is people decided they wanted to see canceled checks, they wanted to see the financial documents, they wanted to see where their money was going. And they were right. They're absolutely right to do that. But I would have to say that right extends to every one of us, whether it's in an HOA or a municipal government. You have to know where your money's going, because they have the authority, the unfettered ability to come in and punish you if you don't pay what they want. But where is that money going? What are they doing with it? And do they really need it? Is there a better way of handling it?
Yeah.
You know,
those are all good questions.
You know, we're talking here about, you know, the retention bonds, and these are mandates by local municipal governments, but yet they're creating the need for something that's going to be an expense for the homeowners to bear, the taxpayers, the homeowners, actually, in this case.
Right.
And also a hazard. It's a danger. They're supposed to protect you, not create situations that are going to help your kids drown or your adults drown.
And at least if the infrastructure is done through a tax district as opposed to a private corporation, there's a little less risk and a little more protection for the owners in that case. you know, because you're not having to buy insurance just for your small association of a couple hundred homes or a couple dozen homes. You know, once you spread this out over a district, the district collects money from everybody, and it may include, often includes people in more than one association or in a very large association that has multiple phases. So that at least they're spreading out the cost, and because they're public entities, they have certain immunities that a private corporation wouldn't have. So, you know, there's that. And plus, because they're public entities, all the meetings have to be public. The records are open to the general public. None of this nonsense with HOAs where the only people who can see the records are the homeowners. And nobody else can see them unless you're a buyer and then you request it. And then, you may have to pay a couple hundred dollars just to have what you call a disclosure packet so that you can look at what last year's budget was. There's so very little transparency in these corporations, even less so than in the special districts, because at least in the special district, there's a basic requirement that all of this information is to be open to the public. So anybody who cares enough to ask about it, if they can't get access to the records, they definitely have legal grounds to challenge that and say, hey, this is public record. I want to see it.
You've made some extremely good points. And I think the more we get into it, the more we're discovering all the fatal flaws in this whole system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you hear from a lot of people, and you have a lot of readers, you have a lot of people who contact you. How many people have contacted you and said, oh, I just love my HOA, I couldn't live without it?
There have been people that have said that they love their neighborhood, they like their neighbors, they like their house. They don't care for the governance. You know, you have to remember that the HOA is basically just a governance mechanism for the association. It's not the people. It's not the homeowners. It's not the structure. It's a legal fiction, if you will.
So,
and it could be changed. It could be dissolved, and there are other ways. The people are supposed to decide how they want to self-govern.
Supposed to.
Instead of having this foisted upon us by basically by local planning commissions. You basically, if you want to buy a house in some markets, you cannot avoid getting into a planned community or worse, a condominium or townhouse community. In some locations, it's almost impossible to avoid. Maybe 90% of everything that's on the market at any given time is subject to one or more associations with a corporate governance structure. And that's because of the mandates that have been in place in some parts of the country, like Florida, for example, North Carolina, South Carolina, Illinois, California. I mean, everything that's new, Texas, Arizona, Colorado, everything is in some sort of an association. And if you try to find a house that, or any kind of housing that doesn't have it, you either have to be willing to travel pretty far from the urban center, or you have to have a good deal of money to, you know, build yourself, you know, maybe $1 million house somewhere in your own piece of land, or possibly you could find some older homes that are in a part of the city that has been neglected for years. But you probably wouldn't want to live there. It probably wouldn't be in the school district you want for your children. It might not be a safe neighborhood. So people don't have a choice. They have to live in one of these associations until such time that we can convince our local governments that, hey, we don't need these things, and we're looking for some way to opt out
and find
another way to handle.
When I got started in all of this and the great internet came along and I was using it and doing some research, I found minutes, and I think it must have been Florida, it didn't say, but it was minutes from a local municipal government meeting where the minutes were mm-hmm. were put on the internet and made public. There was a subdivision, there was an HOA, and people didn't like it. They voted to shutter it. They just wanted to disband the HOA. Every single homeowner but one
mm-hmm.
voted no. They did not want the HOA. They wanted to disband the HOA.
Mm-hmm.
They went to the local municipal government where they were having their meetings, and this one guy stood up and said, my HOA has voted to disband. I think it's a bad idea. The government staff, the staffers who were at the meeting, advised the government board, the panel, to disallow the disbandment because they didn't think it would be good for, I don't know if it was a city what it was. So one person was able to put a stop to it. And when you talk about giving the homeowners more ability and more power to control their own neighborhoods, they don't have it. They really don't have it, because you had the government who upheld the one person who said, no, I think it's better to keep the HOA.
And most of the reason that they say that it's better to keep the HOA is because they don't want to take on the infrastructure. That's one part of it. But what's happening is when you get these older communities, they have all these roads that are wearing out, or they have amenities that they're not using anymore. More and more, these communities are looking to the local counties or the local municipal governments and considering either annexation or incorporating, if they're large enough, incorporating as their own city, creating a tax district of some sort to pick up the cost of their infrastructure maintenance. And in this case, there's no developer involved. So the owners really do have control at this stage of the game. It's a little bit different when you're talking about raw land and the developer hires an attorney and puts two people in a trailer on the land and they vote to start a community development district, and then he starts issuing bonds. In the case of an established community, it's a little bit different. Like, there's another one that I wrote about in Spring Creek Association in Nevada, near Elko, Nevada. And they've been in existence also for several decades. I believe they started in the 1960s or 70s. And they have a golf course and an equestrian area and, you know, trails. And these are all homes that are on acreage. But now they have something like 12,000 people in this town. And they have 150 miles of roads. And even though they're paying, you know, hundreds of dollars a year apiece, they don't have enough money to keep up these roads. And so what they want to do is they're looking into either incorporating or creating some kind of a district and getting rid of the HOA, because they're not really using, they want to convert the use of some of these amenities that they're not using anymore and maybe sell off parcels of land. But it's hard for them to do that as an HOA. And they actually just had a meeting a few weeks ago. I saw the report. But this process has began about a year ago. And they have hired a consultant to go out and do feasibility studies because they're looking at a way, how can they fund their roads and also get fire and police and emergency first responders out to their location, which is a little bit rural. And unless they have the power of being incorporated, it's hard for them to, you know, to arrange for all of these services and to provide these services from a homeowners that are only paying, you know, $50 or $60 a month to the homeowners association. It just isn't going to work.
But it sounds like you're telling me that, or you're telling us, that more and more people are looking ways of disbanding the HOA.
Yes.
And getting rid
of it. I'm seeing more and more stories of it. You know, there are some people who, you know, they're afraid, well, if you get rid of the HOA, well, then everything will look ugly and, you know, who's going to look after the quality of the homes and so forth and so on. But in some of these older communities where that's not as much of a concern to the people, where they live they're kind of modest people and they're kind of live and let live. I mean, this particular association, everybody's on acreage. So they're not that concerned that their neighbor has a basketball hoop in the driveway. You know, there's plenty of space between the houses.
Or their flower pots are cracked. One of their flower pots
right.
is cracked.
And you know, I saw the video of this Walnut Grove in Omaha, and these are just very, you know, very modest homes. And it's clear looking at the homes that people are not, they're not picky about having the perfect yard with every blade of grass in place. And, you know, the homes are older. They have some character. People have their own stamp they put their own stamp on their property to make it individualized and more home. Not everybody is interested in a cookie cutter. It has to be ready to show to a real estate agent at any time, look to their property.
It's funny because going back to the Omaha Walnut Grove, the board president, Ann Rawalinski, called the complaints nitpicking and said the board has worked to improve property values for 288 homes. So you're saying that the people are not really nitpicky because they seem to be more of a live and let live type who value their
right.
their liberties and their ability to just breathe properly, and yet the president's going, oh, you're just a bunch of nitpicky ninnies, you know.
And those are usually the people who are serving on the HOA board are usually the ones that want to preserve the HOA.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
And their inner clique. And the rest of the people, you know, could care less as long as the services are taken care of one way or another, and it's not going to change their cost much. It's not going to matter. And in fact, once Omaha annexes some of the sanitary improvement districts for some of the other communities that they're looking at doing, they report that taxes will go down for those homes. Why? Because instead of having to pay a special district, each one of them having to pay a special district, they're going to absorb all these districts into the Omaha city, and they're going to spread out the cost. And then that way, Omaha wins because they get a bigger tax base, and they can use it to fund other services, and they can reduce the taxes for the homeowners.
So it sounds like we're coming back full circle, back to where
right.
things used to be, right?
That's right. And I just read another story out of South Charleston, West Virginia, where another community wants to be annexed. It's called the Ridges. It's a homeowners association. They want to be annexed to South Charleston. And in the article that I read, the mayor of South Charleston says that once they annex the Ridges, people will have to pay $800 a year more in taxes, but that's about what they're paying now for their HOA dues. So it's a wash.
That's a wash.
And they'll be rid of the HOA. This is in West Virginia. It just came out in the last couple of days.
Yeah, I think I saw that. Debbie, we're out of town. Yeah, we're out of town. We're out of time. Thank you so much. Again, that your blog is independentamericancommunities.com, right?
.com.
So check it out. Lots of good information over there. And Debbie, I hope you'll come back and tell us what you found real soon.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Sue.
Thanks, Debbie. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.